This week on Recruitment Flex, challenging times for recruiters trying to get the candidates to move to cities for a job. CEOs are quitting at a pace we've never seen before. What are the best candidate attraction channels? Plus, the post-hire work HR has to do for skills-based hiring to succeed. Tier F with my dad and Shelly starts right now.
Welcome to the Recruitment Flex with Serge and Shelly. I'm Serge.
And I'm Shelly. And we talk all things recruitment starting right now.
Bonjour and welcome to the Recruitment Flex. Shelly, do you have your passport? Do you have your travel wear already? Because we're going to be traveling quite a bit now.
Do you know what I'm so ready for? Is to put away my winter coats. Oh my God. Oh my God. And I have to admit, I don't know if maybe I'm having travel withdrawal or just FOMO because I'm seeing like all these events, or maybe it's just the way my social media feeds are pre-programmed, but I'm really having a bit of withdrawal here of getting out and talking to our colleagues and just having that face-to-face time. Like I looked at the SHRM event and I was like, oh, because Tim Sackett was signing his volume 2. And I
Did
was like,
buy it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's on,
yeah.
It's on pre-order.
I bought it on pre-order because I want him to get 5,000 copies sold so he can be on New York Times bestseller. So I don't know if you got an email. I got an email.
I did get the link and the message because I saw that he was at SHRM, right? And I was like, oh God, I'd like to be there.
I'll tell you, The Talent Fix, the first book was amazing. So yeah. I'm really looking forward to this one. If the first one is the catalyst for the next one, it's going to be a great book. But Shelly, we are going to Unleash in a couple of weeks. We're not doing a lot of podcast recording, and that's on purpose. We'll do a couple, but we just want to mingle and meet everyone and go to all these parties and, you know, do...
Are we supposed to admit this? Honestly,
there is a lot of different events that we're trying to hit all of it and spread ourselves so we can do as much as possible.
But so we are going there for business.
Like, Shelly, we are business, but like doing business is not always like sitting at a desk or sitting at a booth and try to sell stuff. It's like we're doing business through relationships, through our peeps. So that's the goal. But we also have TA Tech in Washington, D.C. So for anyone listening that wants to go to this conference, we have a special offer. I'll put the link to the TA Tech conference registration page. All you have to do is click on Get Tickets, then enter the promo codes, which is FRIENDS25. So FRIENDS, with an S at the end, 25 is the promo code, and you'll get to save up to $400. And this is only for our friends here at the Recruitment Flex.
It's going to be great. And this is at the International Spy Museum with TA Tech, and it's in Washington.
In 2 weeks now, we have an event in Toronto with our friends at Plum that we're really excited.
Yes, and Humanly.
Yes.
They're our friends too, and the hosts. And it's a invite-only private event where we have reached out and invited talent acquisition execs and leaders from some of Canada's largest companies. And we're going to come together for one night and do what we love doing. And that's talking about the issues that we're facing in talent acquisition. So the idea is that we will eventually do these sorts of events in other parts of North America.
Yeah,
because it is that opportunity to be in a very small, closed environment where we can talk freely about the things that we know are happening. What do we see happening for global trends and just sharing with each other? And it's amazing how it keeps us connected as well to the practitioners, right?
Totally. It's funny because when I see the invite that goes out to the guests, have dinner with the Recruitment Flex, Serge and Shelly, I'm just picturing those emails coming in. Who the fuck is Serge and Shelly?
No, like, who is that? Serge.
I'm kidding. But on that note, let's jump into the news. We've got a couple of quick hits when it comes to industry news. So yes. Our friends at HiBob, we had Sarah Reynolds, the CMO on the show probably a couple of months ago, and she had talked to us about them eventually launching an ATS because HiBob was basically everything but an ATS. It had every other module. Now it has an ATS, so they launched it yesterday. Do you know what the name of it is? It's called Bob Hiring. Clever? Not clever? I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, it's on brand.
It's on brand, right?
Yeah.
The other news, and I thought this one was very interesting because you remember we broke the news here of the Veritone acquisition of Broadbean. And then we met Alex from Broadbean, who has become the senior VP and general manager of Broadbean and PandoLogic. They have now combined both companies, so PandoLogic and Broadbean, and it's called Veritone Hire, which Veritone is obviously the parent company of PandoLogic. And so good on them. I was looking at LinkedIn. Alex is now the senior VP and GM of Veritone Hire. What do you think of that? Do you think that's a good move?
Yes, to do away with the brand, because actually Broadbean is predominant, certainly in some parts of the world. And same thing with PandoLogic. And there's always history with those names, and to give it a fresh start with Veritone Hire. We remember when Veritone first set their toe in the water and we were going like, who are these guys?
Yeah.
And look, it does seem like they've got staying power. They've certainly got money.
They do have money. And it's funny because today I was actually doing research for something else and I came across Wade and Wendy, which is a chatbot that PandoLogic acquired in 2021. And I'm trying to find, does Wade and Wendy still exist? Is it part of Pando's offerings? So if anyone knows what happened to Wade and Wendy, and I'm not saying about two people, that's the name of the company that was acquired. I'd love to know because I have no clue if they're still part of this, they're part of the offerings. But now let's jump into more interesting news when we talk about what's going on in the world right now. And I came across a really interesting article that talks about the challenges of folks that have low rate mortgages compared to the mortgages that are available right now and how it's affecting people moving or relocating for roles. Because obviously, if you have a mortgage at a low rate, and for you to sell your house and buy a house in the new market, you're going to be on the new rates, which like here in Canada, it went from 1.7%, I think at its best. And now mortgage rate is around 6.7. So huge gap. If you're thinking of your mortgage payment, it's almost doubling it. But to dig in a little bit deeper, what it says, so job recruiters in the South are facing hurdles to attract skilled professionals from the Midwest, despite offering competitive compensation packages, according to Bloomberg. That's because too many of the potential hires are locked into super low 30-year mortgage. During the fourth quarter of 2023, the proportion of job seekers in the U.S. who relocated for employment dwindled down to a mere 1.5%. Let's look at what the mortgage data is saying in the U.S. So one-fifth of U.S. homeowners have mortgages with interest rates below 3%, while nearly 35% have rates between 3 and 4%. Then the rest is basically right now the 30-year fixed mortgage is around 7%. So that's doubling what the historic low in the U.S. was of 2.85% in December 2020. So it makes a lot of sense if you had to move for a job and you had to pay double on your mortgage, unless the company is going to make that up to you in some ways. I wouldn't move. I don't know. Would you move, Shelley?
No. And I think recruitment is not just new hires, like coming from outside the organization. True. Think about your internal mobility. If part of your career progression, and there are a lot of big US companies where internal mobility or job progression means you move.
Yeah.
A friend of mine's daughter works for KPMG, and that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
When you sign up, that you will move to different locations. And it's great if you don't have a mortgage. But if you are mid-career, you're right. Like, why would you move? Because even if your compensation stays the same or goes up a little, it's still not going to double, but your mortgage rate is. Like your quality of life just dropped.
I was watching Bluey. I don't know if you've ever heard of Bluey. So Bluey is a very popular children's show based in Australia. And it's on Disney.
But I'm not plugged into Bluey.
It's amazing. So anyone that has kids knows exactly what Bluey is. So okay. I was watching an episode with my daughters before bed last night. And they're dogs. They're family of dogs. And the dad, they had to sell their home because he got a job offer somewhere else. And obviously the kids were so sad and disappointed. This is where they grew up. They didn't want to move somewhere else. And it made me think, I'm like, in this day and age, I cannot see myself moving to a different city for a job, especially in the world of remote. I know it's less common, but as a knowledge worker, I could do my job anywhere. I cannot imagine uprooting my family, doing all of these major life changes for a job in an economy that you might get laid off next week, right? Or in a year from now. What's your take on that, Shelley? Do people still want to move for jobs? It was very common, like when I grew up, that parents move because of a job, but I don't see that anymore. And I don't see the interest.
Remember we were talking about the disproportionate male-female population. A lot of it is due to immigration.
Yeah.
I believe one of the other things we'll probably see in this next generation of workers is going to be that mobility. Because if you've already moved once, so say you came to Canada and we just brought in, what, 3 million people?
Yeah.
There's 3 million people that are willing to move wherever the work is.
Yeah.
Because they've already done it. So for us that are Canadian born or American born, what have you, it is true that statistically you'll rarely move more than 10 miles. So what I find interesting is your strong feelings about this yet as a young man looking for work, first job, post getting out of school. What did you do? You moved across the country.
True.
You moved twice, in fact, because you were in Toronto and then you came to Alberta. So very interesting that you have moved for work, but now you can't even imagine it.
Yeah, no, good point. It's funny because when you're saying that, I'm like, actually, I did move, but it was such a different part. And I did not move because I had a job and I got another offer. I'm like, no, I quit my job and I'm going there because there's more opportunity. But it'll tell you it changes when you have children and all of that challenge as well. And like you think about, it's expensive to sell your house and to move. Actually, they have data here that says, what is the cost of relocating? For a mid-level manager in the US, for a homeowner, it costs $78,000 for them to move location. So this is like moving, real estate fees, all of that stuff. If you're a renter, it's $33,000. It's a huge cost, right? I don't know if I'd do it, but would you move at this point? Maybe you.
Oh, I would. Yeah. Yeah, I would. Point. I would move. Not right like this year or next year, but I would move for various reasons, right?
Not for work. You'd move to be closer to your kids or whatever the case is, which makes sense.
Yeah, you're right. Kids change the game. They really do.
What else is in the news, Shelley?
I found this article that talked about the government of Kenya is blacklisting over 500 private recruitment agencies, alleging their involvement with scamming Kenyans that are looking for jobs abroad. We make these assumptions that these are highly educated people that come to Canada or come to America, get a work permit. But in fact, there are local private recruitment agencies in Kenya scamming their own people for jobs in Canada. I have and do know that this is also very common practice in the Philippines, where the recruitment agency charges you, the job seeker, and it's completely legal to charge someone as a job seeker to get them an interview for what could potentially be live and work in Canada. What's become chronic is the scams.
Yeah.
That there is no job on the other end. And I think you've had some direct experience with this, right?
Yeah, it's happened. Actually, I can think of one time where I had someone, and I forget where the location, but I think it's the Philippines now that you're saying it, is they reached out to me and being the talent acquisition manager. She's like, hey, I'm starting next week. give me the details. Like, I got the offer letter, it's signed, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Then you start digging into it. They had our CFO's name. They sent us the offer letter and it had all the key people in the organization. It was obviously executed probably from LinkedIn, trying to find like legit names. And that poor person, I'm sure they paid quite a bit for that particular job, but there was never a job. And I know this is happening. And I know in Canada, there is people within Canada scamming people in other countries as well, or trying to work with SMBs that don't know better. Because when you're getting LinkedIn messages saying, hey, we run LMIA programs to get you the employees that you need, I'm like, why do I need an LMIA program, right? There is a ton of scams. And this is also the reason why most big companies on their career site have some type of messaging that we only advertise our jobs here because of these scams. But going back to this Kenyan situation, I thought this was fascinating. So every year, there's around 1 million people that graduate from college, university to be able to get in the workforce. There is only 200,000 roles available in the country every year. There's 800,000 people that are graduating and have no possibility of a job. Hence the reason the Kenyan government is like, hey, we want to facilitate you for you go UK or whatever, get the experience, but we want you to come back. Which I'm sure is very challenging, right? Like when you leave, you meet someone in that country, you probably don't come back. But isn't it fascinating? 1 million people graduate from university and there's only around 200,000 jobs that are available to them. It's a really tough market. So I get why people would fall for these scams.
Mm-hmm. In other news, let's move on to a list that was published by Benefit News that talked about the best recruitment HR chatbots. And so they listed out for 2024. And I'm going to go right to the good stuff here. Not surprising. Number one on the list was Olivia from our friends over at Paradox.
Yes.
No surprise at all. Me Bebot was number two. Radency was number three with best recruitment software for live chats and virtual events.
Yeah.
Ideal, top recruitment platform that serves as an employer of record. HireVue, leading recruitment solution for on-demand interviews.
Yeah. So what's your thoughts here?
I'm just wondering if they sponsored this article. I don't know what kind of scrutiny went in here. Now, it does go on to say that they did take the time to test and evaluate the best HR chatbots on the market today and collect feedback from clients that are using it in all industry sectors, whether it was retail, IT, healthcare. They wanted to develop a complete perspective on the options that are available in the recruitment tech market. But Wade and Wendy wasn't on the list. Sorry, Serge.
Yeah, so it must not be a solution anymore, I'm assuming. Reading the article is actually pretty good because it goes in depth of what the pros and the cons of each one are. And I thought it was pretty realistic. But I was questioning myself on some of them. I'm like, HireVue and what they're talking about, there is no chatbot. So how is this the best HR recruitment chatbot in 2024? Is basically what they're talking about is their video solution, which we can argue is HireVue the best? Maybe. They're definitely the most well-known.
Still alive.
Yeah. And Radency.
So many of them have gone under.
Exactly. Right? Radency is an agency. Or maybe this is different than Radency that we know of. One that is fascinating, MimiBot. I read up a lot on MimiBot. So what it is, it's a chatbot for internal HR and talent acquisition team, not an external one. And it seems to work really well. The recommendations and the referrals on it are really strong. So I don't know. I've never really dug into them before. And I think it's a pretty cool tool. And no surprise, Olivia, it's the standard bearer when it comes to chatbots in our industry. And I think will be for a long time. So kudos to them. Now let's jump into the tip of the week, Shelley.
Okay. Your tip of the week is brought to you by Plum. Plum knows that when people flourish, businesses thrive. Using science-backed insights, Plum aligns human potential with job needs, allowing you to build high-performing teams from a single platform. Ideal for improving hiring choices, identifying future leaders, and offering personalized career advice. Plum supports the entire employee journey from hire to retire. Discover more at plum.io. So, Serge, I caught this really cool article and I thought, I got to share this. This has got to be part of my tip of the week because it is maybe not your pet peeve, but certainly one of the things that makes me cringe is using that we are family in recruitment marketing. It's easy to throw darts at it, but who's doing it right? So I did a little bit of research and found that there's better ways of explaining what you mean when you say we are family. And the example from the article was Netflix, and they did get it right. They used the analogy of a professional team. People are selected because they're really good at one thing. Like if you think of a baseball team, think of any sports team, right? Each position has a purpose and you choose the best people for that. And they all move in the same direction and they've all got the same goal of winning. So I take it one step further because there's other analogies you can use. It doesn't have to be a sports analogy. It can be orchestra. It can be, you know, talking about ecosystems, for example.
Yeah.
That can be another way. But my tip of the week is stop saying we're family when describing your culture.
I love the sports team. And I read the Netflix book and a couple of chapters are exactly on that strategy and why it works. And it makes a lot of sense because as part of a team, like everyone's striving for the same thing. But if you are not performing at a level you need to do, it's no longer about feelings or anything like that. Is you need the best people in that particular seat or position for the best possible chance to win. And I think that is perfect for business, right? It's exactly the same. People get cut, they waive, traded. Well, not that you can trade employees. That would be amazing though. Like I want to bring trading employees in a corporate setting. That would be my dream job, just trading employees for other employees.
Human trafficking.
Never mind. All right, good tip of the week, Kelly. Good tip of the week.
How about we
jump into the recruiting insights brought to you by our friends at Mitova. Shelley, are you tired of the same old outsourcing woes?
Well, say hello to nearshoring. It's like outsourcing, but closer, and it won't make you pull your hair out.
Picture this. Top-notch IT talent from Latin America.
Many Latin American IT professionals have strong English language skills and even live in the same time zone, so no more midnight conference calls. Hallelujah. Plus, Latin America's growing tech ecosystem, strong educational institutions, and a pool of skilled IT professionals make it the perfect region for recruiting talent.
I have the perfect company that does this. The company's name is Mitova. They have local experts who handle everything from recruiting to HR support.
So why settle for the same old outsourcing blues when you can have the nearshoring party with Mitova?
Look them up at mitova.com and let's get the fiesta started. Shelley, did you ever do executive recruitment in your recruitment days? You did.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yep.
That's probably where I had the most fun.
Really?
Where I enjoyed it the most. Yeah. Yeah. Like, how could you ever get tired of interviewing and meeting really smart people?
Yeah, true.
Oh, loved Good it. Point. My favorite. Yep.
There's a recent article in Forbes that talks about the challenge that companies are seeing right now because CEO turnover is huge right now. So it hit a record last year, just 9 months into 2023, and more than 1,400 CEOs had already headed for the door. You automatically assume that it's because of retirement because most CEOs are a little bit older. This is not the case. So newly appointed CEOs are also leaving their roles with around 11% departing after just 12 months and 34% leaving by year three. It makes me think, why? Is it just that they're failing in their role really quickly? Is it they're realizing that this is not what they were sold coming into the organization? But I have a hard time believing that, Shelley, because I just think about executive level hires, they go through the ringer. Like I recruited executive level roles and the process is extremely lengthy. There's a lot of due diligence. So I am surprised that CEOs are turning over so quickly. What is causing this? What's your take here?
I don't think executive search is immune to the same things we see in the mid-level. And what I mean by that is multiple interviews. But I think more importantly, depending on the search firm that you're working with, you may be getting a glossy version of what's really happening. Why do they really need to fill the CEO spot? Are there any sacred cows? Who's going to tell you that?
Yeah.
If you're going for the top spot, is it the chairman of the board? You don't know. So I'm not surprised that there is this much turnover, because it's the same. Like, in order to attract the sort of talent that you want, you may not be giving them the whole story. The other thing, though, is how long it takes if you are without a CEO for 6 months.
The average time that the role is vacant is 149 days.
Somebody's got to be steering the ship if there's nobody in that role.
And generally, it would be the president or whoever's second in charge. But it makes me wonder, if someone is running the company for that long, why don't we just give them the title, right? If they're doing a good job. But obviously, it's a little bit more complex than that.
What did you read into it?
There's a couple of things. I talk a lot about love bombing, right? That we're selling something that is not real. And I think this is happening, even though there is a lot more due diligence, there's a lot more conversations. But I still think we have a challenge. We still don't want to share what our faults are, because we might not know what it is as well. When you're in it, you just become involved and you don't realize the craziness or things that don't work well until someone comes in with fresh set of eyes and it's like, oh, this is way worse than I thought. And I think that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But still, even to that, you think about going back to a topic of discussion we've had the last couple of weeks. And if you read the book, Good to Great, it talks about the history of CEOs. And if you look at those great companies, the majority, and it was over 90% of those CEOs, came in internally, had been promoted through the ranks. There was not one of those great companies that they listed that had a CEO that was a hired gun. Not one. So maybe as a company, you should look at it. Good to Great is like one of those Bibles in business, but no one's following that advice. Like, why are we not hiring or prepping or getting a succession plan for those CEOs internally? So something to keep an eye out, but CEOs are not loving their jobs and quitting pretty quickly, which seems like the rest of the population. Shelley, our next recruiting insight. So Personnel Today, your favorite news site is sharing what candidate attraction channels work best. This is UK-based, but gives us a pretty good picture across the world. And it was done with a survey of around 700 recruiters, mainly in-house, which is a really good thing to clarify. And it shares that LinkedIn is the number two source after their own career sites, which I find interesting, because unless you are household international brand, no one is going to your career site. So I'm going to make some assumptions that those that are going to the career sites are coming from somewhere else. And another assumption I can make is probably a majority of them are maybe from Indeed, and in the UK could be Reed or a couple of other sites. But I'm not surprised. This is my personal experience as well. When I look at all the sources of candidates working in the world of knowledge work, LinkedIn is by far the provider of the best quality candidates that I've seen from multiple sources. Obviously, it depends what you're looking for, but that's been my experience. So it says that the biggest recruitment challenge right now is the lack of suitably qualified, skill and experienced candidates. This affects 61% of organizations. We're hearing this. I know we're all having conversations with recruiters, with TA leaders, with HR folks. And the biggest thing I hear over and over again, we cannot find qualified skill applicants for the roles that we're hiring. So we know this is true. This is real. The other challenge that they're seeing is building a diverse and inclusive workforce was the second key challenge of 34%. And another challenge that a lot of organizations have been having is the advertised salaries are lower than the market average, and that affected 31% of companies. But any surprises, Shelley, that LinkedIn is probably one of the most preferred sources of candidates right now in the UK?
That did surprise me. That did. Because I think LinkedIn serves a certain market.
Yep.
It's not the whole market. It's a certain market. And these are in-house recruiters.
Yeah.
So it did surprise me that job boards did not show up. And I know we've talked about this before. Is LinkedIn a job board or not? By true definition, LinkedIn is. But I didn't realize they were that dominant as a job board in the UK.
I am not surprised.
Really?
I think we underestimate the LinkedIn job board portion. And Jeff, if you're listening, job board doctor, don't come screaming at me because I forget on which side that you're on, or Steven Rotberg. LinkedIn, there's definitely a huge element that is a job board, but I think we underestimate how much traction and candidates that LinkedIn drives, even compared to the Indeeds of the world, because I've worked on platforms that were getting sources from every candidate, and LinkedIn does really well and is usually number one when it comes to sources. When it comes to source of hires, they're definitely on top of their game compared to the other job boards. And to your point of saying, I'm surprised that there's no other job boards, I think it goes to what I said earlier. The candidates are coming to their career sites, are coming directly. No, they saw the job on Indeed or Reed or whatever the case is. And that's how they ended up to the job site.
The last piece of interesting results from this survey was that social media had the lowest quality candidates and the lowest quantities compared to other channels. And the other channels, of course, would be recruiting agencies or specialty job boards or talent pools, which performed well when it comes to quality of candidates. And at the bottom of the barrel is social media.
Yeah, not surprised. Quality from social media is usually pretty low, but that's expected, right? This is a different pool of candidates when we're talking about, and I hate these terms like passive or window shoppers. If the right opportunity comes in front of them, they might apply. And that's the goal. So you don't expect the quality from social media being extremely high, but still nevertheless an important channel because you might be hitting candidates that you wouldn't hit any other way. So if you can deal with a little bit of the trash, social media is still quite useful in your sourcing strategy. Shelley, do you want to jump into the last recruiting insights of the day?
Yes. We've spent certainly from January until now talking about one of the hottest topics in talent acquisition around the world, skills-based hiring. Yeah. And this article from HR Executive talked about what is the work that HR, more specifically learning and development, need to do internally if hiring managers and recruiters are all on board for skills-based hiring? What happens next? Because recruiters will toss them across the finish line, and the hiring managers are then left with people who we hired for their skills, but most companies haven't made any sort of plan of how to train and educate, and how will the needs be different than what we've always done? And so talent acquisition is shifting towards the skills first, as we know, with 40% of employers on LinkedIn now using this method. This is self-reported, of course.
Yeah.
And they're actually hiring based on skills rather than the degrees. Search, what were your thoughts on this article?
So a couple of things, and this is where I'm a big believer in skill-based hiring, but I'm also realistic and have been in the trenches for a long time. And I understand the challenges of creating a skills taxonomy within an organization and how challenging, because there's literally millions of skills out there. So it's great to talk about skill-based hiring, but the challenge is, can you actually execute? How do you know the skills that are internally that you need, right? It's hard to get companies to do a proper job description with basic things. And then when you're asking those same questions as far as an organization of, okay, there's a million skills out there, which one do we need in each role and what do they mean and how does that translate into how we assess candidates? That is extremely hard. I do believe we're heading into an economy and a talent acquisition world that skill base is going to be critical. But I also believe it's going to take a long time for most organizations to create the back end to be successful with hiring skill base. And honestly, I don't think it falls in talent acquisition. I think talent acquisition does the execution on the first level of, okay, you've given me all the tools that I need to understand what skills we need to hire for this role. I've gotten the proper tools and assessment. So now I can do it. But all of that work, it has to be done from HR and talent management before it gets to the point of, okay, we're ready to do skill-based hiring. And I think there's companies out there that have facilitated and made it a lot easier. Our friends at Hiring Branch is a perfect example. This is a long tail. I think the expectation that talent acquisition is going to be all skill-based hiring in a couple of years, we are delusional. We're talking a 10-year play here, in my opinion, at least. What's your thoughts there?
Interesting. Even when I think back of some of the clients that I've worked with over the years, we're just calling it skills-based hiring. There are a lot of companies out there that have a good 5 years under their belt already.
Yeah.
HR was calling it competency-based, which hiring people for their potential or hiring people based on what you are competent in doing rather than your degree is what I'm referring to.
Okay.
So I've got a couple of clients where that is something that they implemented and they're 5 years in. And it does mean mapping much differently, like the taxonomy that you talk about. It does mean a design within the organization, because if you said that these are the skills required to do this work, how do you take someone who's in the organization and what is their map to get them to the next level or operating at a higher competency level? So now we just call it skills. So some HR people have laughed and said, we've been at this for years. What we haven't been at for years, though, is hiring people based on those competencies.
Yeah,
I've always fallen back to just show me your degree and what experience you have and taking their word for it. Now with new technology and testing, it's actually becoming more of a reality. So you're right. If you've not put in the heavy lifting that goes with designing a skills taxonomy, which this is not lightweight stuff to do.
No.
You've got to really know what you're doing. You can't just roll in and copy and paste from ChatGPT.
No.
Sorry, but it doesn't work that way.
It is a lot of work. It is a lot of work, because if you're looking at skill-based hiring, you have to define all the required skill. When you're talking about even a mid-sized organization, that's a massive task. Mm-hmm. Then you have to assess what is good in that particular skill set. And then you have to focus, how do you provide education for those folks to acquire those skill sets internally, which is a completely different program. Like, how are you creating something with learning and development that actually builds to acquiring those skills? And it doesn't stop that. Those skills 2 years ago are not the same skills you need now and are not going to be the same skills you're going to need 18 months from now. It's a constant reinforcement and changing. It's very challenging, but I think we will get there. It's going to be another 10 years.
You've got to start small.
Got to start small, right?
Start somewhere. Just start. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
The upside of doing it is just so huge.
So on that note, Shelley, we've talked enough for today. We've got some exciting news, exciting events. But again, Shelley, we're so fortunate that we have a really engaged, loyal listenership, and we really appreciate. So keep listening. Keep reaching out to us. We love you. On that note, Shelley.
Au revoir.
Shelley, let's face it. Texting candidates is the easiest way to hire quicker today. But your cell phone doesn't connect to your ATS. You're sharing your personal number with strangers. That's pretty scary, right, Shelley? And it's not even legally compliant.
This is where our friends at RecText come in. They've created simple yet powerful text recruiting software that works with your ATS. Plus, it's designed by recruiters for recruiters, so you know it works. To learn more and book a demo, visit www.rectxt.com, mention the Recruitment Flex, and get 10% off annual plans.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.